Cindy, so great to have you here, and just like to hear more about you. I mean, first off, my colleague Dave Plisky always speaks very highly of you. So how about you just give us a little bit of your background and your involvement, both inside and outside of the church, if you want, and what you're currently doing that is related to the church right now.
Yeah, I was teaching at a couple small colleges when one of our parish priests asked me to get involved in youth ministry. That was in, oh my goodness, 1999. So that was my first job in ministry, doing youth ministry at our parish. And we saw a lot of fruit and success from our youth ministry program. So our bishop asked me to come direct the office at the diocesan level. So I did that for 9 years. Although I started in youth ministry, and I also did young adult and college campus ministry. And then I went to our local Catholic radio station for 8 years, so doing media. And then now I'm back doing parish work at my home parish, I do pastoral work in the Office of Evangelization, and my main responsibilities are to journey with those becoming Catholic.
That's great. And was all this being done in Indiana? Is that where you've been your whole life?
Yeah. Born and raised.
That's great. And you were, I'm assuming you were a cradle Catholic. Is that
I
right?
I call myself a porter crib Catholic.
Okay, what does that mean?
My dad's family was Catholic. My mom's Lutheran. And then they divorced when I was seven. Okay. So I went to the Catholic church, maybe one weekend a month until I got my driver's license and I started driving myself to Mass.
Wow. So I'm always curious about that. What drew you to the faith at that age in your life, especially if you were on your own driving yourself to Mass? Like what were you already picking up at that point?
I would say the primary thing was my grandparents on that side. They were the ones that, like, I could tell that their faith in God influenced every aspect of their life, where that wasn't necessarily the case with my mom and my, like, that side of the family. I mean, they're great people and believers, but the faith exuded from my grandparents that were Catholic.
Could you give any examples of what that looked like with your grandparents? I'm always curious as to, like, how did you know that the faith kind of permeated every part of them?
One thing was just the Sunday obligation. There was no question or discussion. Just when I was there, we got up and went to Mass on Sunday. And then just the prayers. And my grandfather actually did a lot of, like, pastoral counseling of kids that were in trouble. You know, they talked about the Sermon on the Mount has everything that a person needs to live a fulfilled life. They witness to each other. When I teach theology of the body, I use them as an example. They were long before the teachings of theology of the body, but they lived it. I could see their self-giving love in the way they cared for each other and their children and grandchildren.
Did you ever get a sense as to, like, what motivated them, or, like, were they, so to speak, the lineage of someone, like their parents, your your great grandparents? I mean, was there, like, a, do you feel like that was just part of the world they grew up in, or was there something else that was influencing them?
My grandmother was one of six girls whose mother died when she was very young. So the faith was planted in them, and they all stayed faithful. But back then, faith was so much of a kind of private thing, I think. They didn't talk, like, I didn't hear them talk about it as much. So I really think my grandparents, like, I think they overcame a lot of things. They got married very young and had seven children pretty quickly. And so I think that they had to rely on God. I guess they didn't have to, because a lot of people choose not to, but.
No, that's good. I appreciate you kind of telling me a little bit about your background. So this whole move from media, or actually from parish work to media, then back to parish work, Could you just explain a little bit more about like what drew you into youth ministry? What did you find to be fruitful in that? And then why did you make these pivots? Like what was the impetus behind those things?
Actually, when the parish priest asked me to be in youth ministry, at first I said no, and he said why, and I said I didn't even like teens when I was one. But he asked me to pray about it, and I was seeing young people, like high schoolers, who had something that I didn't have in high school. You know, I had my grandparents as a role model, but I was a very typical high schooler in the 80s, especially having divorced families. I was, you know, into the party scene and actually making a lot of risky choices. And I started seeing teenagers that really got it, and faith was a very important part of their everyday life. You know, I went to mass on Sundays, but God was very distant to me at that time. I knew that I wanted it because of what I saw in my grandparents, but I hadn't really encountered him in a real, tangible way. But I was attracted, so I was seeking him, but I didn't know where to find him. And it seemed like these teens did know where to find him, and I wanted to be part of something like that.
So, how did you find God in a real tangible way?
Well, the first glimpse that I had was when I had my daughter. When I held her in my arms, I always knew, like, God is love, that we're his children. That's the way people had always talked about him. So then I'm holding this baby that I know nothing about. I don't know that when she's 15, she's going to tell me she hates me and never wants to see me again. But I held this baby, and I loved her so much that, like, my heart ached. And I thought, God loves me not only this much, but more, because he's infinite. So that was really one of my first glimpses. And then our parish had Christ Renew. We still have Christ Renews as parish. And a friend invited me to go on a retreat weekend. And it was really in the talks, the witness talks, and really going to confession, like really examining my life and confessing for the first time and receiving Jesus's mercy, that I encountered him in a real, tangible way. And from that retreat on, I was changed, and I wanted to seek him. I wanted to know what it meant to love him in return.
Yeah. And you feel like that's been your driving force since in your relationship with God to seek him more, to know God more.
Yes, and I want others to have what I have.
Yeah. Where is it like today? Like what is your experience of God today? How has it changed or how's it the same from
I
when you
think
had that retreat?
when I first started in youth ministry, there was a lot of talk about relational ministry, but relational ministry in a sense that you had to have a relationship with somebody so that then you could share the truth with them. And the truth was really about, like, the moral teachings. And through the years, I've come to know that, not that relational ministry had it as this goal, but almost like there was an ulterior motive in getting to know someone so that they would listen to the voice of truth and reason, rather than the good, like the sacredness of just having a relationship and conversation for the sake of the good of both people involved, not some outside truth. And just coming to understand that the truth isn't a set of moral ideals. The truth is a person whose identity is love. So relationships exist so that we can experience the love of the Trinity, as we come to know and be known by another person.
Yeah, wow, it's beautiful. It's so powerful. And How have you experienced that in the context of the ministries that you've been in, both in the parish and, say, in media, whatnot? How have you ex both experienced it, and how have you been able to try to express it?
Well, I don't know why. I feel like I have encounters, crazy encounters with people that I think the Lord ordained, and encounters with people that not everyone experiences. Right before I met Dave, actually, I was at a bar with a friend. They were donors to the radio station. And the husband had a birthday party for his wife, and they invited me. And I ended up meeting this person there, that identified as a middle-aged, washed-up dyke. And she said that we couldn't be friends because I was a Catholic radio person, that she wouldn't be welcome in my world. And I was like, why wouldn't you be welcome in my world? Well, because you think I'm a sinner. And I'm like, we're all sinners. And just getting to know her, and I think she was so taken aback that I even cared to learn about her life. She hadn't experienced that in other Christian circles. She's in her words, she was kicked out of her Christian youth group when she was in middle school for being gay, and she didn't even know she was. So just starting that friendship and just affirming the good in her that I see has just led to, I mean, a friendship that I learn more about who God is through this person, and I hope that she learns more or maybe challenges some of the ways like the Christian God has been presented to her, in a judgmental, harsh way. And then, like a month later, I meet this famous atheist. Like he's got all kinds of books on God, and I need to stop hanging out at bars, but that was not a like a
No, it
beer
sounds like this
garden.
is like where your church is. I like it.
Just he kept challenging me on the God of the Old Testament, and just being able to witness to that's not my understanding of God. And yes, all scripture is true, but the word of God speaks to a people at a time, and he called religion dangerous. And when I tried to explain, like, the Trinity is mutual self-giving love, that we're called for every one of our encounters to be like that. And if every relationship and every encounter, I want what's best for the person in front of me that's made in the image and likeness of God, whether they believe it or not, or believe in God or not, they are made in the image and likeness of God. So if I can recognize that I have just as much to learn about who God is from hearing their story and getting to know the good in them than they have to get with me. If we all approached our relationships that way, the world would be transformed. And that's really what Jesus came to do, and that's what he calls us to do.
I mean, you're clearly speaking my language. I've come to a point also in my own spiritual life where the sacraments themselves, and let's specifically like focus on the Eucharist. I mean, if we come to the Eucharist with such devotion and we look at what looks to be this flat piece of bread and what looks to be wine, but we realize there's something more than that happening, like that works a muscle so that every person you meet has that same type of hiddenness of God, right? I feel as if I'm almost at a point in my life now too where it's like the Eucharist is not an end point for me. It's like the beginning point. So it's like now this is my way to understand everything sacramentally, the whole world, especially your encounters with people, because those are the most complex encounters that you have. And I just love hearing what you're saying because that's been a very transformative thing for me. And but also it's a little it's an, it's I interestingly enough, it's very controversial thinking that way. It's like, because it somehow kind of makes it as if you're like dabbling with fire when you're actually hanging out with people who don't seem to have it all lockstep in line with what it means to be Catholic. And I'm at a point where I don't know what it even means to be Catholic, to the truth, from that criteria. Because it seems to me that if we are going to understand Catholic as universal, the reality of Christ is everywhere and is found in and through everything and every person. Because what is the option? What is the alternative to that? Right? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. So, like, God is either everything, Christ is either everything, or he's nothing, you know? And I think this is a great witness to this. I'm going to get into some more of these questions that we had for the context of what we're doing with this Religion to Reality podcast, and specifically from the skills that you have and that the experiences that you had specifically in ministry, both in parish and also media. And when we did the discipleship study, it said that a lot of Catholics are interested on ongoing faith formation. And I would say that faith formation would look like a little bit of what you have already expressed in your own life, to go from not just understanding content, but understanding the very person of God in and through the other that we encounter. So what do you think is the most effective way to do that? I know that we have all these different means, we have all this different technology, all these different apps and things like that, but do you feel as if there is a particular way that is the most effective in bringing people to that next level? Some people would say to like the second half of life experience, where you're able to kind of allow yourself to detach from, say, our initial understanding of God and religion, to allow it to go to a deeper level of love. Have you found like the way to best do that?
Well, first it would help to understand what we mean by like formation. When people long for formation, I think sometimes they think like theology. I want to understand how to explain the sacramental life of the church or apologetics, where formation, if you really think of the word, it's being formed into other Christs. So, and I think sometimes we think that we have to have all the answers before we like go out to evangelize. But that's, I mean, look who Jesus called us his disciples. None of them were scripture scholars. They were the ragamuffin, man, just normal people or the hated people with the tax collector, with Matthew and they didn't know, but they had had an encounter with Jesus and his love, and they were transformed and they wanted to share that. And they learned as they went about doing it, because the Holy Spirit wants us to live that self-giving mutual encounter in every exchange. So we become formed the more we do it and the more we try to see like Christ sees and receive the other. And I think, I don't know if this goes along with your podcast, so if it doesn't,
No.
totally edit this out, but I think sometimes we've created a consumer parishioner. I work with one of my colleagues, Michael Dopp. We were talking about this some time ago, and he gives talks on evangelization. And people will hear a talk and they're like, we need more of this. What's the next thing? We need to bring in speakers. And he's like, no, the end of evangelization is for you to go out and do it, to radically love people, not have the next thing that you like, that you get something out of. It's giving what you've already received away. Where we're formed into Christ.
I love that. I mean, the consumer Christian is a very real thing, consumer Catholic, real thing. I mean, we are attracted to, good speakers. We're attracted to the beauty and truth that is revealed in logical arguments, all those types of things. But yeah, I mean, just kind of making it more heady, which I think is what we value the most, just in the Western world, in general, we kind of like lose the soul of really what the incarnation is about in lots of ways. We aren't just our head. In fact, how many of us, when we act with our heart, we often like kind of think that that's somehow a lower way of acting, or we need to be suspicious because somehow that's going to take us down a place where it's not coherent enough with, say, how we should look at a situation. I've always been amazed how, and I think you could probably also agree with this, that my strongest encounters with God in my life have not come in any way packaged within, say, the context of, say, church or church teaching or things like that. It has not come that way. I mean, I've had some very like aha moments by learning things and what I'm like, oh, that's interesting and that's really profound. But they have not been the strongest encounters with God. They've been with people in situations that do not fit any of the textbook definitions of how God ought to work in this perfect doctrinal world that we like to think is possible for us to kind of be working towards. Do you resonate with that? Or I mean, like, what would you say about that?
Absolutely. I think of the last few times that I was overwhelmed with God's goodness was actually just sitting in my office meeting with somebody for the first time who's expressed some interest in learning more about God or maybe even becoming Catholic. And oftentimes in the very first meeting, they're sharing intimate details of their life with because they don't get many opportunities to sit face to face with somebody, looking in their eyes and making it safe to share their heart. We've been so isolated, and like technology has dehumanized us in so many ways. I know it can be used for good. I mean, we're talking on a podcast right now that is going to be
Sure, of course.
mediated, but our world is starved for that face-to-face interaction, and that those are the sacred places where God like shows up in powerful ways. And a lot of times they'll apologize, and I'm like, don't apologize. This is holiness. This is holy ground. Us like, and then I try to share a little bit about my own struggle so they know that they're not alone. I'm not this perfect church lady who has everything together. Like, I literally have been in very difficult situations that you're in. I've been wounded. I've done wounding, I'm not reduced to those things. That God loves me and He wants good for me, and He loves the person in front of me and wants good for them. And the more we can focus on that and not our differences or, oh, politics is making me crazy right now. Like, I even think, like, would we have to worry as much about like the political climate if we are just sitting around tables, loving and laughing and crying and sharing with each other? We would see that we all want the same things. Yeah, we were made for it.
I mean, if there's one thing that unites us, it's suffering, right? I mean, I often, look at news sources just to understand what's going on in the world. And I'll go and look at, very, I guess you would say conservative sources and then more liberal sources and just kind of scope everything out. And I'm always amazed at the stories that show up on both sides, so to speak, are the ones that are deal with tragedy and suffering, right? And it's a way to somehow, I mean, of course, I know we kind of politicize everything nowadays, but it does give us a way to realize that, politics cannot necessarily address suffering in any type of meaningful way. I mean, suffering is just suffering, and it doesn't matter who it is or how it happens or why it happens. It just is, and it is the great unifier. Often we call it like common humanity. Like that is what is common about humanity, is that we suffer. And the one thing I was also thinking about what you were saying is like, for many of us, and I will completely put myself in this category, for so long in my faith journey in learning things and the content of the faith, I always felt that, well, when I had an encounter with someone, I had to essentially kind of maybe not convert them right then and there, but give them all the reasons why they ought to be thinking about converting to becoming Catholic. So it became like I need to just win the argument on everything they want to throw at me. And now I'm at a place where I'm like, I do not care about winning any argument at all with anyone. I mean, if someone walks away and like, yeah, I'm just not going to become Catholic, I'm like, okay. Like, it's like, I'm not going to think that your entire salvation is dependent upon what I can do to make you Catholic. Because it once again, once you are able to see that even God goes outside of the doctrinal boundaries of Catholicism, you're more in awe of God than try to thinking that you need to kind of contain God within some type of tribal place that you've found yourself to be finding the source of all truth, right? So, I mean, have you had any type of a transition from, say, understanding Christianity as winning the argument to being okay with, like, letting the young man just kind of walk away, so to speak?
I'm currently walking with a person who, the first time I met, came across as this striking mid-20s professional woman who could actually like be a model. And since then, have learned that this person identifies as trans, and is a biological male. And so, as I've been reading church teaching and consulting with people about what does this look like, this person came to us and asked to be baptized. And if we believe baptism is the primary way for the church, like the primary tool that church has given us for salvation, we have to take seriously the thoughts of denying somebody baptism who's seeking it. And I've started to have a few limited conversations. This person is getting to know people in the parish and shares that with people. Feel safe sharing that pretty quickly. So I don't feel like I'm betraying anything by talking to colleagues about accompanying this person. But there's this sense that, oh, there's no way this person could get baptized until they embrace their manhood and stop transitioning. And I'm not sure about that. I don't have the answer to that. I don't know. I do know that I have shared with this person that Catholicism sees God as the author of marriage and that marriage is a unique relationship between one biological male and one biological female. So this person who thinks that they want to seek marriage with a man, that's not something they can pursue if they decide to be baptized in the Catholic Church. So I use the example with this individual that if somebody came and asked to be baptized and told me that they had two wives, that they were a polygamist, that we would have to rectify the situation. They couldn't become a baptized Catholic if they still planned on treating two women as wives. So explaining to this person that that is something that they would have to discern, but whatever they discern, they are a child of God. God loves them and desires to spend eternity with them, and that we're all wounded and broken, and we're all seeking love and goodness, and there is so much goodness in this person that transcends. I hate using the word transcends, but maybe it's a happy accident, but that transcends the identity that this person has as being a trans individual.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's great to be able to come to a place where you can start saying things like, I don't know what to do. I mean, even sacramental theology, at the end of the day, is, I don't want to use the word ambiguous because that make it maybe a little bit too shaky for a person to grasp. But you don't understand how grace works in the sacraments. Who could? So like, what happens at baptism? I don't know what's happening at baptism, to tell you the truth. I don't know. I mean, I know that we like to kind of legislate it on some level and thinking that this is some way that you are now participating in the life of the church and you are obliged to participate in the life of the church because of what you're saying you're doing by becoming baptized. I guess that's one way of being able to kind of legislate it, but grace, I think, operates outside of your participation in say the church as a community of believers necessarily. I mean, so it's interesting to know, like, I think it was Simone Weil. I don't know if you're familiar with her, but she was a mystic in the 20th century and clearly had an incredible encounter with Christ, but chose not to be baptized, not because she didn't believe in what baptism was saying, but she had this issue with the idea that, like, how can you become baptized without somehow then separating yourself from everyone else? Because you are essentially now saying that you have something that other people don't have. You're part of something that other people aren't a part of. But the baptism, ironically or paradoxically, is really saying that it's free gift to show that it's something that you don't earn, that you are, in a certain sense, already participating in. And the baptism is affirming the gift of God's grace that's possible because you're breathing. I mean, like, it's a very interesting thing. I mean, this is what makes sacramental theology, I think, very, well, if anything, open-ended in some ways, right?
Well, and
Without,
yeah, when we explain, like when I'm explaining baptism to non-Catholics as they discern whether to become Catholic, we talk about what does baptism do? It cleanses us of original sin. What is original sin? It's the brokenness and the disorientation that comes from us thinking we get to decide what's good and evil. It's from the fall. We inherited it from our first parents. And it's not original sin is original brokenness. So to say that somebody's brokenness will prevent them from the remedy to brokenness doesn't seem like that's where I can't wrap my head around it.
And it's good to be in a place where it's like, yeah, we don't know how to best maybe even explain this, but we do know that God's love is paramount in and through everything, you know?
Well, and I know I also have the deep desire to see this person be healed in the deepest sense of their identity, but I don't know what God's doing in them and what that looks like from without. And it's not my, like, I can't know that. I mean that's where we see Jesus talking about the hypocrisy of Pharisees is, you might look like you have it all together on the outside, but your hearts are far from me. And so we don't know what the Lord is doing in someone's heart. And sometimes I just try not to be an obstacle to get in the way of what the Lord wants to do in somebody. I mean, that's
Yeah, it's a
really the
beautiful.
job in
Yeah.
ministry, really.
That's so beautiful. Yeah. That's beautiful.
Is to be witnesses. That's what Pope Paul VI beautifully said, that modern man listens more to witnesses than teachers. And if we listen to teachers, it's because they are first witnesses. So the more we can share what God has done in our own life and who we know God to be, which is way bigger than any of us could ever articulate, and way more beautiful and love, like we just fall short. Complete goodness with nothing impure, perfect happiness and self-giving. We're always going to fall short of trying to describe that, but if we can witness to it, there's plenty of resources to do the teaching throughout church history. You can always point someone's towards Augustine's Confessions or Aquinas, but what we need now, so that people are even willing to go look at that, is we need that radical self-giving love demonstrated no matter where we are on our journey and where they are on their journey.
Yeah, so well said. I mean, letting go of not only winning the argument, but letting go of a timetable that we think that the person needs to be on to try to kind of get their life in order. I mean, like, who are we to even kind of think that we have the ability to kind of direct that? You know, I mean, and in lots of ways, it makes us focus more on what we perceive to be problems than affirm the goodness that already exists within the person. You know, and I think that's the real thing that I always find to be so problematic overall, because I mean, I'll be the first to like enter into a situation and be like, oh, this is the problem, this is the problem, this is the problem, we need to fix these things. But wait a minute, like, where is the good happening? Like, what? Let's just hold back here. I mean, God is present. God is here. So how attentive am I to that presence of God, rather than like, where is God not, from my perspective? Just want to touch on some of these other questions here. But one of the major focuses of the whole project with Religion to Reality is to help people decompartmentalize their lives, as we like to say it. Basically, not viewing their faith life as something that's disconnected from every other part of their lives. I was inspired by this question because of how you said your grandparents didn't seem to compartmentalize their faith life. So do you think that there are ways to help encourage that kind of wholeness when it comes to formation? What have you done? What have you seen? What have you been trying to encourage?
I think discipleship is more about interior integration than like even the way we break down like formation, like catechesis, theology, sacramental, grace. Like we want to categorize all of these things. But really, it comes down to what you said at the beginning, this universality that God is in all, or he's not in anything. And I think we can get into compartmentalization. I think it was part of the next question, in fact. When, it's good for us to look at the lives of the saints and look at other people who are models of faith and love. But then I think we can put those expectations on us when maybe that's not what our charisms look like specifically. And if we're so worried about figuring out, what our individual spirituality is or what our charism is, then we really limit sometimes how God might want to work in us. If I say, that's not me, well, it could be. God can transform us at any time for any moment. When I went out to that bar that day. I had no idea. I was actually going to make an early night of it, but ended up in this long conversation with somebody and scheduled a coffee. And then when we go back to like the atheist, one of the things that most bothers me about my friendship with him is he is trying to convince me that God is dangerous and that he's, in fact, he asked me once if my friend and I were going to be going out to this see this band, and I said, no, actually, I have my hour at the Adoration Chapel. And he said, oh, come be with real friends, not imaginary friends. And just not taking offense to that and just say, oh, he's the realest friend I have. But ultimately, it's not my job to convince him. And it's actually very frustrating that I sometimes feel like a project to him that,
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess in a situation like that too, it's kind of him revealing more of his wounds than anything else through the process. So clearly he's been wounded by someone who's used religion in some type of, I guess, manipulative way or
That's
something,
the interesting thing. It's in one of
which
his
happens, you
books. So I
know.
got one of his books from the library and read it. I haven't told him that I know all those things, but it's there on the library shelf.
Yeah.
But back to kind of the compartmentalization, I think that sometimes can just get in the way of what Pope Francis is wisely calling us to, and that's accompaniment. That when we think we're in a certain role for a certain purpose, whether it's theological formation or sacristan or something like that, I think we can lose the sense of accompaniment. And that goes into all aspects of our lives. So I happen to have been working in the church for the last 26 years. But I see amazing people doing that art of accompanying outside of that. I mean, one of the people, he just came into the church last year. His name's Buddy, and he's a barber. But he's brought four people to our Becoming Catholic sessions already this year. And I think that his profession lends itself to that. They're sitting in a chair having a conversation. But I think we could all ask ourselves, like, okay, I'm not a barber sitting in a chair, but how do I encounter people, and how do I recognize the sacred opportunity in that, rather than just a transactional, exchange of temporal things? If I'm treating the store clerk the same as I would a vending machine, that's not living out the sacramental and incarnational view of the world. Like the person in front of me might, like I'm, they're in the role of taking my money so that I can have these goods. But for all eternity, they are an immortal soul who is meant to spend eternity with God and with me. And the more I can put our interaction in that context, the more I will know God, and the more likely that they will encounter God through me in some way.
Yeah, very, extremely well said. Beautiful. Tell me more about these Becoming Catholic. What is it, a series or a group, or like what exactly is
That's what
that?
we call our. I love that my pastor doesn't like insider baseball language. So we went from RCIA to OCIA and caused all this confusion. And nope, like people who don't know anything about Catholicism don't know, to them, it's becoming Catholic. So we call it becoming Catholic. And really, it's our accompaniment of somebody who's seeking and trying to provide. I basically see the four pillars that are outlined in the Acts of the Apostles. For somebody to live as a Catholic disciple, they need intimacy with God that is nurtured through prayer. They need to worship. We're made for worship. And if we don't recognize and treat God as the thing worthy of our worship, we'll start worshiping ourselves or other idols. And then formation, that learning what it means to love God in return. He who has first loved us, what does it look like to love in return? So that formation that can include the teachings of the church, the things in the catechism. But then we all need community because we were actually made in the image of a relationship. So none of us are meant to go alone. And Mother Teresa says one of the greatest tragedies is that we've forgotten that we belong to each other. In my parish, St. Vincent de Paul, there's a great quote by St. Vincent. It's not enough if I love God if my neighbor doesn't also love him. So
Beautiful.
in our becoming Catholic, we try to look for ways to build up those four pillars in each person so that they're ready to live as lifelong Catholics. And if they have those things, others are naturally going to be attracted to it and want it too, just like I wanted what my grandparents had.
Yeah. Let's talk about that on a practical level. I know that we're kind of getting into an hour, but what's it like for you now with who's showing up to the Becoming Catholic group and you're going through the catechism and someone is just like, I just can't really get behind this particular teaching. This one is just too tough. And it's probably coming from some type of maybe personal re relationship that's firing off this kind of resistance to it or something like that. I mean, what type of criteria do you kind of allow for a person to go through the entire process and say, okay, you're ready to be baptized, you're ready to be received into the church? Like, does a person have to be completely believing every single thing the church teaches and all in every way, shape, or form in order to get to that point? Or how do you go about that process?
I really just challenge them that they need to, if they feel like they can live in good conscience in to be a Catholic disciple, availing themselves of the teachings and the treasury of the sacramental life of the church, if they're willing to commit themselves to that, even though we all fall short of it, if the desire is that, then we open the doors to
Sure.
that. I'd say the most challenging thing for most people is the church teaching on marriage. I think a lot of times they assume that, well, if they're not Catholic, why would we think that they're in a valid marriage? Why would they need to be annulled or, to have us look at that marriage? That's probably the thing that people struggle with most. So just accompanying them through that process and knowing that God is working in and through, like you mentioned, suffering, like that's a pain. It's that takes people through woundedness that they maybe encountered a long time ago and can bring that back to the forefront. But if we can continue to witness that any suffering, the only reason God allows suffering is he knows he can bring about a greater good. That so, I mean, that's part of the walk with Christ is trusting that. And that's one of my most common prayers is, Lord, I trust, help my lack of trust.
It's beautiful. Well, I think this is a great place to come to an end, actually. I mean, that's a great way to end it. Is there anything that you want to express that you weren't able to express though, in the context of this? One thing I will say that we've been talking about with all these interviews, and you've kind of mentioned this, that we're beginning to think that the most prophetic way to live the Christian life in the context that we're living in today is to radically listen without agenda when we encounter people. You're shaking your head, so I'm guessing you agree.
Yeah,
I
that's
mean,
that sitting
like,
in my office,
yeah.
receiving the other person's story, recognizing that it's unique and sacred in all of world history. And it's their story, not mine. And I can never fully know from outside what God is doing internally.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that's the one thing that maybe could ride above all the things that we consider to be polarization and trying to like win arguments and all this other kind of thing that we kind of always somehow think that we have to kind of play in that type of space. But listening without agenda, because I think in the process you'll always will hear the very voice of God in the midst of that.
And I would just encourage anyone that's in ministry or involved in any kind of formation, if you have not read Pope Francis's Joy of the Gospel, this is what, like, at the heart of what he gets to is that art of accompaniment, removing our sandals at the sacredness of the other, loving them whether we think they deserve it or not, because guess what? We don't deserve it. At the end of the day, we all fall short of loving God and others as we should. And those to whom much is given, much is required. So there's actually a higher standard for us who are benefiting from the sacramental life of the church.
Sure. It is all gift, and it's a gift that's meant to be given as gift. Yeah. Beautiful, Cindy. This has been a lot of fun being able to talk with you. I'm sure that we'll be able to catch up again at some point, maybe with
I would love
Dave
that.
on the call too.
Religion to Reality is an initiative of DeSales Media created by me, Dave Pliske, and is produced and edited by Connor Donnelly. If you found value in our conversation, please subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. If you love the show, ratings and reviews go a long way toward letting others know about the show. Go to religiontoreality.org for more details and resources.